You're listening to Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back to Fritz and Friends. I'm Cheryl Fritz along with Scott Eckersley, coming to you on 1320 WILS and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. I am thrilled to be joined in the studio by Judge Thomas Brennan, founder of Cooley Law School and former Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court. Good evening, sir.
Cheryl, I'm delighted to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you here. Also joining us, Lawrence Nolan, who is an attorney with Nolan, Thompson, and Velas in Eaton Rapids. Good evening, sir. You're a frequent guest. Love to have you back here.
It's nice to be here, Cheryl.
Very good. Well, you're both in town now. You just got back from the airport picking up Mr. Brennan, going before the Supreme Court tomorrow to argue a case. You're both representing Judge Hugh Clark, Jr., who's a district court judge now. Lawrence, if you don't mind giving us just a little background, again, our audience is familiar with the case, but to kind to catch folks up to speed.
Well, as you will recall, Cheryl, I've been here previously, and this was a case that was an appointment by Judge Granholm prior to the expiration of her second term as governor of the state of Michigan. She had appointed Judge Amy Krause from the district court to the Michigan Court of Appeals, and that left and created a vacancy on the district court in Lansing. And so Hugh Clark was appointed by Governor Granholm. The governor has a right to make those appointments, and he was appointed on December 20th. And it's our position that he will serve to January 1st of the next general election. He can run in that election, but the gubernatorial appointment is the issue. And this case was filed by Attorney General Schuette, who took office on January 1st or 2nd and brought what was called an action for quo warranto, which Justice Brennan was very familiar with in regards to a case called A.G. Kelly, Attorney General Kelly, versus Dorothy Comstock Riley. And so that's kind of the general introduction on the case. That's why we're here. I was retained by Judge Clark, which it's always certainly a compliment to be retained by a member of the judiciary. But I was talking with Justice Brennan, who became very interested in this issue, as I recalled from my days back in 1982 when Dorothy Comstock Riley issue arose. And so I gave Tom, who's been one of my mentors as president of law school, as a close personal friend. But this is the first case that I'll have the opportunity to argue as co-counsel. So tomorrow we'll be presenting the argument. I will start with the initial response to the Attorney General's complaint for quo warranto in response, and then Tom will share the podium and present the response in regards to Article 6, Section 4.
Now, of course, Attorney General Bill Schuette is suggesting that that Hugh Clark, Judge Hugh Clark Jr., shouldn't be a judge in that position, that he was only, by law, this is the Attorney General's position, that by law he should have only been there until the new governor took over for that, you know, 12 days or so of that term, if I understand correctly his position.
Yes, it is. That is his position, Cheryl, and he bolsters it by referring to the case of Kelly against Riley, or Frank Kelly against Dorothy Comstock Riley back in 1983. When that case was decided, I was then the president of the law school, and I remember being very upset about it and making quite an effort to try to get the court to change their mind after they had ousted her from the bench. We'll get into that before the court tomorrow, but quite frankly, it's an issue that I think is a very important one and very important for the prestige and the history of the court. And that's the reason why I've come back from Florida, from my home in Florida, to participate in this. I think it's a case that really requires the court to take a serious look at the rule of law and when politics shouldn't be considered.
Well, and as Lawrence and I have discussed before, Justice Brennan, it is about the rule of law, and it is about politics. And he and I have discussed that in the past, that this looks political.
Well, that's what I call nose count jurisprudence. There used to be a professor out at Michigan State University who would always predict what the United States Supreme Court was going to do, and it was all based on so many Republicans, so many Democrats, and they would vote this the way they their supposed party affiliation. And I think sometimes that's what happens in the Michigan Supreme Court, and it's because, unhappily, while the court itself, the justices are elected in nonpartisan elections. Through a quirk of the Constitution, which says that they're nominated as provided by law, and the legislature's never changed the law, so the way that they're nominated to the court is through party conventions. So here you have a strange situation where it's a nonpartisan office, but the parties select the candidates. So they have that label of what parties put them on the ballot. And then, of course, the public and the newspapers and so forth can say, well, there are four Republicans or three Republicans or four Democrats or three Democrats, whatever it is. And that explains how the case was decided. Well, unfortunately, that's not the way the law works. It should be based on the precedents and the law and the statutes. And in fact, the justices are all required by law to give the reasons for their opinion. And these reasons are technical, legal reasons, and it's not just a matter of voting their party preference.
And I take it you think that Attorney General Bill Schuette couldn't be more wrong in his assessment of the situation.
I could not be more convinced of it, and hopefully we'll be able to persuade the court that we're right on that subject. I was very surprised that he proceeded to file this action, and quite frankly, I'm very confident that we'll be able to undo it.
And in the meantime, Lawrence, you and when we have spoken the last time, I found it interesting after an interview with Hugh Clark. He says, look, I have a parking space. I go to work every day. I'm doing the job of judge that I'm supposed to be doing.
Well, not only that, Cheryl, but I have had the occasion not to appear before Judge Clark, but to visit his courtroom and wait for him to finish his docket to meet with him to confer on this case that we're bringing tomorrow. I could not be more impressed. And, of course, he was he is polite. He's courteous. He is a breath of fresh air on the bench, as many, many of the new jurists are, from the sense that they don't pretend to have any misgivings that they know it all. He practiced law for a number of years and certainly established himself as a very fine practitioner. He was rated well qualified by the Bar Association. He ran for this office before. He relied upon the governor of the state of Michigan having the authority to appoint him and selling his practice, closing it down, and taking the office to do public service. So I think as people realize his wide breadth of experience and expertise, both in practice and also on the Lansing School Board for which he was president, I think it's really been a benefit to the community. And Judge Clark was just an excellent appointment to the judiciary by Governor Granholm. And, of course, we don't have enough minority representation on the bench as it is in this state. I think that's an inclusionary type thing that it just is something that goes along with his appointment. He'll make an excellent judge, and I've seen that.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. That's what we have to do in radio from time to time. Both of you gentlemen have said you'd be willing to hang out for just a little bit longer. I appreciate that. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends right after this.
You're listening to Fritz and Friends on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And welcome back to Fritz and Friends. I'm Cheryl Fritz along with Scott Eckersley, 1320 WILS, and streaming live on 1320WILS.com. To reintroduce my guest, Justice Tom and Brendan, founder of Schooler at Cooley Law School, former Chief Justice of the Michigan Supreme Court, and Lawrence Nolan, attorney with Nolan, Thompson, and Velas in Eaton Rapids, both representing Judge Hugh Clark Jr., District Court Judge, and arguing a case in front of the Supreme Court tomorrow. We touched on earlier, Justice Justice Brennan, about the politics that come to play and your position seemingly have come to play before the Supreme Court as well. Your path to the Supreme Court started out with an appointment by Governor Romney, then Governor Romney.
That's right. I had a long and not so storied career in politics. I started out running for the state legislature in 1952 and lost that election. I lost that again in 1954, ran for judge 3 times before I finally won as a common police court judge in Detroit. And then Governor Romney appointed me to the circuit court. And in 1966, he asked me to run for the Supreme Court, which I did and was elected as a very young man, as a matter of fact. A friend of mine, Dick Smith, called me and to congratulate me, and he said, "Remember, Tommy, my boy, early ripe, early rot."
Oh, no. So,
I did actually rot, but in any case, I was on the Michigan Supreme Court then from 1967 through 1973 when I left to run the law school. But this case definitely caught my eye back in the 80s when it came up. And one of the reasons was because the Constitution of the state of Michigan specifically says that the Supreme Court shall not have the power to remove a judge. And I was amazed in how this could be happening, and looked at all the papers and the documents that were filed in connection with the Riley case, and could find no reference at all to that section of the Constitution which said that. And how the case could have been argued by all these bright lawyers and court clerks and judges and everything else, and nobody ever even mentioned it, was stunning to me. And I made an effort to try to get the court to, after they ousted Riley, Dorothy Riley, from the bench, to reconsider the matter and go back and look at it, which they've refused to do. So when I heard about this case of Hugh Clark, I welcomed the opportunity to come and participate in it, because I think this needs to be corrected, and hopefully that the records of our court will show that the Constitution means what it says and that the justices are bound by it. They take an oath to support it.
And Lawrence, in talking about the issue of Judge Dorothy Comstock Riley, Justice Riley, how closely do these compare to you?
Well, what's interesting, Cheryl, is that I had a past history from the time I worked as a security guard back in the 70s and went to law school at the school that Tom had founded, and became very good friends with Dorothy. So Dorothy was also served on the board of directors for approximately 6 to 8 years while I was on the board, of which seat I still hold. But Dorothy became a very close friend, and certainly Wally as well. This case is not a Dorothy Riley case. Certainly, it's a different provision under the section of the Constitution. Tom is absolutely correct in his position. That's why we'll be arguing equally my argument. In fact, on the way up here, Tom kind of said, "Let me try my remarks out." And after he got done, he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Well, we had some question about who was going to go first, either him or I." And after he gave me his remarks, I was just amazed by the wealth of history that is evoked and everything else. And as two Irishmen standing looking at each other, I said, "You're going second. I'm not following those remarks."
Well, very good. Gentlemen, I can't thank you enough for coming in today. I mean, literally from the airport here. And Lawrence, as always, I appreciate your perspective and letting us know what's going on. I will follow carefully and look forward to hearing from you as to how it goes tomorrow, and arguing in front of the Michigan Supreme Court in the case of Hugh Clark Jr., a district court judge here in Lansing. Justice Thomas Brennan and Attorney Lawrence Nolan, thank you so much for coming in this evening.
My pleasure, Cheryl.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us, Cheryl.
Thank you so much. We'll be back with more Fritz and Friends on 1320 WILS after this.